Casey's at. You Casey's at. Good morning, everybody.
Good morning.
It's good to be in here. Those people are well fed. They keep on listening. So feel free to eat. We're going to talk this morning about alcoholic beverages. And alcoholic beverages has something in common with what we spoke about last week, that it's something that people use just like they do medicines all the time, that commonly do not have any kind of hashgacha on them. So with medicines, there are reasons to think why, having to do with cholim, special reasons why people might be allowed to do things even if they're not so kosher. Of course, you know, there are people who would get sick if they didn't have their schnapps, but for most people, you know, not having alcoholic beverages is not so dangerous. So we have to try to understand what is or is not okay, being as the bulk of the things, bulk of the alcoholic beverages do not have any hashgacha, and people are drinking plenty. So we want to just get a handle on, and we're going to divide things into, it's going to end up being different groups, the things that are going to be clearly and obviously no good. And my guess is that those things are things that nobody in this room would ever touch anyhow. And then there are going to be things that are with almost no shayla to them, and they're pretty good, and then things in the middle that are, you know, maybe we could find the reason why it's mutter, but maybe it's not so great either. Okay, someplace in the middle. Okay. In order to understand what we're talking, I'm going to go through first. You have in front of you, there's a shiur. There are six steps in making any kind of alcoholic beverage. We're going to mainly be talking about whiskey, but the same is true for, you'll see wine and beer fit really into the same steps also, give or take. Let's go through that. Then we'll talk about some of the shilas that there are, or studden that there are, and then we'll get back to these steps to see how they play out.
Are there more pages?
No, there aren't. Okay, so we're going down the sort of down the middle. Okay, the primary ingredient in making an alcoholic beverage, well, the alcoholic beverage is defined by it having alcohol in it. Okay, what makes alcohol is produced when sugar ferments, the yeast ferments sugar into alcohol. Okay, so in order to make an alcoholic beverage, you have to start with sugar. Okay, you have to have sugar and water. Now, the sugar could come actually from straight sugar, really from cane sugar, and that would make what we call rum. But usually it doesn't. Usually it doesn't come from straight sugar. It'll come either from a fruit. Fruits are full of sugar. Like you find, we take plums, you take plum juice, and then you make an alcohol out of it. That's called slivovitz. Anybody is familiar with that? Okay. Or you can take grape juice, and you ferment it, it turns into wine. And if you make it into whiskey, we'll see in a second how that happens, it'll be brandy. Okay, so those are from different fruits. You can make an alcoholic beverage from the sugar that's in there. But by far the most common is to not make it from a fruit or from sugar, but to make it from starch. How do you make it from starch? Foods that are starch, like potatoes and rice and wheat and barley and all those kind of foods, a starch is really made of thousands and thousands of sugar molecules attached to each other. Okay, when you bite into a piece of corn, it has a reasonably bland taste. Rice and corn and wheat, they have a bland taste, but if you would break apart those that starch into a lot of little sugars, it would not be bland at all. It has a very sweet taste. Okay, as some of you may know, if you ever tasted rice milk, okay, or soy milk, what is that? That is, someone broke down the starch in soy. Soy doesn't have a sweet taste. It has a pretty putrid taste, actually. It doesn't taste very good at all. But if you break down the soy into sugars, break down the starch into its little sugars, it all of a sudden has a sweet taste to it. And that soy or rice milk is the starch broken down into a sugar that has a sweet taste. Okay, now, once you do that, if you break it down, you use enzymes to break it down. Those enzymes, for your information, don't have much shilas to it. Those are pretty straightforward.
Enzymes is what separates the sugars.
To break the sugar down into the starch into its individual sugars. The starch is hundreds or thousands of sugars attached to each other. To break them down, you break it down into a sugar. Now we have our sugar and water mix, which we call a mash. Okay, you have this mash sitting there, and now you can ferment it. The fermentation is usually pretty straightforward. You put yeast into it, which also doesn't have too many shadows. So you put in yeast into the mash, and it ferments. That is to say, the yeast acts on the sugar and converts the sugar into alcohol. Okay, so now we have alcoholic mash. Okay, we have this watery mush that has alcohol in it. What happens is that the yeast can only act until it gets to about 12, 13, 14% of alcohol. Okay. Once it gets too much alcohol, the yeast plotzes. Okay, the yeast can't function in that kind of an environment. There are people who have pushed it to 15, 16%, but you really can't get it much beyond that. The yeast just can't handle that. It's the environment is not good for the yeast to function in. So the yeast stops functioning at like 12, 13, 14%. Now, which is what they used to make, which is called wine. Okay, when you make wine, you fermented grape juice with yeast, it turns to 12, 13%, and then you're finished. You clear out, you know, you filter it out, get out the junk, you skip a bunch of these other steps, you might age it, you filter, skip some steps, you put it into the bottle, and you're ready to drink it. That's what wine is. Okay? And beer is a similar thing. Beer, you fermented it to that point. Here you started not with grape juice, you started with started with barley and rice. Okay, you started with barley and rice to make the alcohol. You throw in the hops, are thrown in at an early stage for some flavor. They don't ferment for flavor.
What are hops?
Hops is just it's a plant that gives a certain taste to it. It gives a beer type taste to it. Okay, I shouldn't say that. It gives a certain taste, and it's legally now you put it in. That's what makes it be considered beer. It has a certain taste.
I'm sorry. There's no problem with yeast, depending on which. I know they talk about sometimes wild yeasts versus the commercial ones. There's no issue with yeast.
You as far as what could
as far as as far as what the whatever the yeast is comprised of.
I didn't say there's no Shiloh. I said there's very little Shiloh to it. That's not our biggest question over here. It could be. I'm not saying a yeast is made by fermentation. It could be not kosher. When you go to the store, you should buy one that has hashgacha on it.
Okay.
But it's pretty hard for it to become trait. Usually it's not an issue. Okay. So beer is made in a similar manner using rice and barley. But what happens to the beer, you don't leave it at the 12, 13%, you water it down to 5%, the beer usually you sell that, and you sell it as that. Okay, but that has an extra element of flavor because way at the beginning they threw in hops also, that gives a certain flavor to it. Okay, and that's how things were for many, many years, from the time of Noach, all the way until, I don't know, a couple hundred years ago. You see when it happened, about the time the Rivash has truths about this, is what happened was someone figured out that there's a way to raise up the alcohol level. To make it instead of 12, 13%, he can make it much higher percent. What do they do? At water, we all know water boils at 212 degrees, but alcohol boils at about 173 degrees. Okay, so what happens is, if you take a pot of, you go home and take some wine and put it into a pot, and you bring up the pot to 180 degrees, what's going to happen? The alcohol is going to all be boiling out because the alcohol boils at 173 degrees. But the water and everything else is going to stay behind because it doesn't boil till 212. Now, it doesn't all stay behind, but most of it stays behind. So what you do is, this is called distillation. You boil it at a temperature in between the boiling point of alcohol and water. The alcohol boils out together with a lot of the flavor, which is good for you. The flavor also boils at a low temperature. It boils out. You catch those vapors. That is to say, when you boil it out in your pot in your house, it's just going to go into the air. But here it goes into a hood that forces it to go someplace, and those vapors, when they get to the end of the line, they get cooled down and turned back into a liquid. Okay, so you boil up the vapors, go up through the pipe. On the other end of the pipe, there's something that cools them down. And now what you're catching on that other end is now a much higher percentage of alcohol because you're leaving so much water behind in the original pot. Okay, it's called the still. In the original still, you're leaving behind a lot of water, and what you're capturing over here is something with a higher alcohol content. If you do that process a number of times, I mean, you run it through here, you take what you catch over here, and you distill that, and then you do it a couple of times, you could get it as high of a percentage as 95%. You can distill up till 95%. And if you do that, if you distill till 95%, there won't be any unique flavor to it. That is to say, it'll taste like alcohol. Alcohol has whatever taste it has of its own, but it won't have any of the taste from what it came from. Meaning, it won't at this point make a difference whether it came from corn or rice or grapes or apricots. It doesn't make it, whatever it came from, the alcohol at this point will be what they call grain neutral. Okay? It's called grain neutral spirits at that point because there's no more carryover from the original taste. And all you have is plain old alcohol, it's 95% alcohol and 5% water, and it has little or no connection to the original taste. That product, if you took that pure alcohol, it's used industrially all over the place. That's used in processing. But for beverages, when we drink it, it's used in two things. It's used in two main things, which are vodka and gin. a vodka is, they take that 95% alcohol and they water it down. So you take basically pure alcohol and water it down to 40%, 60%, whatever you want to drink your vodka at, and that's it. So you're drinking just plain old grain neutral spirits. Okay, that's all they're drinking. Okay, and that's why vodka is so common, that vodka is flavored. You find lemon vodka and orange, because it doesn't have any, I mean, it has the taste of vodka, but it doesn't have any other body to it, any other character, should say, to it. As opposed to bourbon has character because it's made from corn and a certain amount carries over that gives it a certain taste to it. But if you make vodka, it's pure alcohol, so it has, I mean, it has the taste of it. And, you know, a Russian peasant's like that. But if you want to have people more sophisticated, will make orange vodka or lemon vodka or something, they give some flavor to it, to give it a little more life to it. Okay? And the other thing that's made like that is gin. Okay, gin is also, it's the same thing as vodka, except that gin, early on in the process, there's different ways to do it, but at some point in the process, you put in something called juniper berries. Okay? Something that gives taste to it. Also, it's a taste that goes with gin. So vodka is just plain old diluted alcohol. And gin is the same thing, just it has juniper berries at different points. There are three ways to make gin. At some point in the process, there's juniper berries that gives a certain taste to it also.
What's juniper berries?
It's just a fruit. It's just a little fruit. Whatever it is, it gives a certain taste. It's not important. Whatever, it's kosher. So it gives a taste to it. Okay, so in other alcohols, not vodka, gin, in other things, let's say you want to make bourbon, you don't distill it up to 95%. If you do that, you're going to lose whatever taste, the other elements of the taste that come from the corn or from the water. There's even, you know, people are particular, people who make these products are particular what water they use also. They want to have water that has whatever characteristics. So all that you put into the beginning, into the mash, you want to come through. So you distill to 40, 60%, you know, the amount that you think is right, and you end up with a concentrated product, but it has a certain, it's not alcohol, it's 40% alcohol, but it's 60%, we'll say 58%, 59% water, but that other 1% has certain characters that makes my bourbon taste different than your bourbon, or makes bourbon taste different than rye. It's because it's made from, the carryover from the original thing gives it some kind of taste that's unique to my thing. Okay. Now this distilled product is aged. Okay, we're only going to age it. You only age something that has character, like a bourbon or something like that. You don't age vodka. Okay, vodka.
What's the problem with turning on the fire for the distill?
To turn on the fire to distill the liquid. What's your question as far as bishlakim? Okay, so that's an interesting question. The Tosfos talks about that. Whether there's bishlakim on beer. That's what he's talking about, because it's not edible raw. And it's served at Shulchan Malachim, so you should think that it should need Bishul Yisrael. That's a question, whether it should need Bishul Yisrael. Tosfos says it doesn't, because the water is considered the ikur of the product, and the other things that are in there are considered secondary. They're considered unimportant. Now, even though nobody is drinking beer because they want water. Okay, but in Din, that's a Shaila and Bishlachim, why that's true, but in Din, that's considered water. Water is edible raw. The fact that there are other things in there doesn't count towards the Bishlachim.
Especially other than coffee.
What?
Coffee.
Same child for coffee. It's the same question for coffee. Coffee actually has a more complicated child because the coffee beans are roasted before they go into the water. Coffee beans are roasted before they ever get near water. They have their own child. Okay. But it's related. It's a Tosfos about it. Okay? It's a din Shulchan Aruch that it's not considered Bishlachim. So for most alcoholic beverages, after you've distilled it, you want to age it. The aging, I don't know how it works, but somehow that develops the character of the product. You don't age vodka and gin. They have nothing to them. They're just plain alcohol. You make it, and it's in the bottle. By the end of the day, it's in the bottle already. Okay, it's quickly sold, because it's a very straight product. And that's, when you think about it, okay, I'm not making fun of the Russians, but the Russian peasants, this is a very straightforward process. You take your potatoes out of the ground, you make them into your alcohol, and within a very short time, you're ready to drink. Okay, I forgot to mention, I'll throw it in now, that vodka has a rule, vodka, I think gin has it also, vodka has a look by law in America on a product that's made out of just grain neutral spirits. It needs to say on the bottle what the source of those spirits are. It has to say legally, they have to write down what the source is. Now, it's not always, It's not like an ingredient panel on potato chips that says, you know, ingredients, potatoes, oil. It's not so clear. It's sometimes it's like blended into their, you know, their explanation of how wonderful their product is. Like, this product made in the hills of Colorado from, you know, core, you know, so it's like blended into their wording, but it's in there. It's always on the bottom someplace that it'll say what it's made out of. Sometimes they'll say just grains, they can get away with that, or they'll say potato or whatever. Yes.
So when it's made potato, it doesn't really taste different than if it's made right. of something else?
No, only in the marketer's mind does it taste different. But no, it doesn't taste any different. It's all the same stuff. It's grain neutral. That's the, when you make a vodka, it didn't come out at 40%. It came at, it was 95% alcohol. It's called grain neutral spirit because it doesn't have any...
They just had water.
And then they add water. What?
Only water and flavor. Yeah.
If they add water. Now, if they add flavor, then of course it is going to be different. My cherry vodka is going to be different than his cherry vodka because my cherry flavor is different than his.
What's the difference if you buy your own 95% neutral spirit and add water? The same thing?
Yeah, you can. I mean, you don't get. You don't get a fancy bottle. I mean, but it's called that legally grain neutral spirits because it doesn't have anything to it. Because it's been purified, but in that purification to 95%, you lost any carryover of taste. Blah blah blah.
Everyone knows vodka tastes differently. Expensive vodka, cheap vodka, don't taste the same.
Okay. Yeah, I'm not a drinker. So maybe that disqualifies me from talking to you. But I'm not a drinker. But if there's any difference, maybe they use different water. It's hard for me to believe that.
They distill a different number of times, I know. Yeah. The average distill, you know, 7 times.
Everybody distills it until it gets to 95%. And that's the highest, and you can get it, and the lowest if you make a vodka. Yeah. And then you add water. So it's hard to see what it could be.
There are people that can... Like,
I believe it. Okay, I believe it. But I don't understand it. Okay. So then, for the more sophisticated alcoholic beverages, you're gonna age it. Even wine, which skipped the distillation stage, as you guessed, right? Wine doesn't get distilled, but wine gets aged. Or better wines get aged. Alcohols for sure get aged for many years. Okay, and we'll come back to Shiloh's about that. They get aged. They sit for many, many years. You know, 12 years, 15 years. It sits for a long time to somehow develop the taste. And then, before it gets bottled, it has to be blended. Okay, what blended means to say is that this is a very natural product. It doesn't come out the same every time. If I run a bourbon company, my bourbon today and my bourbon next week is not going to taste the same. It's just because of the way the plants grew, et cetera, et cetera. The customers like a certain, you know, to be used to getting a certain taste. When they buy the bottle of whatever, they want to have a certain taste. So they blend different, at the simplest level, they blend different batches together. I mean, they might even blend of the same product. It might be the same, whatever brand they're having, they blend this year's with last year's with 4 years ago's, just to get a taste that the customer is used to getting a certain taste. So they'll blend different years together. In other cases, they blend even different products together. Okay, they'll blend, this scotch will be made from 4 different scotches blended together to create the one that we consider, that's ours. It's made from these 4 different ones. Okay, that's on a different level. And on an even more sophisticated level, less sophisticated level, is people will blend in actual flavors into it. Okay, they don't just blend in other whiskeys. They're not just blending a bunch of different whiskeys, they'll blend in actual flavors into it, which legally they can. Okay, depending, the law is very specific on how you write your name on your bottle, but there are lots of ways to describe something as being whiskey in different ways, and you don't know that it's flavored, but it really is. Okay, we could talk about that when I come back. But depending on the legality of how they write it, it can include what's called harmless coloring, flavoring, and blending material, HCFBM, something like that. It can include it, depending on how they word it, it can include that also. Okay, and they include flavors. And then another thing called blenders, we'll get to that. The second blenders is its own special American thing. We'll get to that. No, it's a special thing. We'll get to blenders. So they blend these different things together, and that's considered a high art, to know how to blend the right things together to give over the taste you want to. And not only the taste you want to, it's the consistent taste from batch to batch. You want to give over that taste. And then lastly is you bottle it. Okay, for most of these alcoholic beverages, the bottling is done cold. It has a tiny bit of Shiloh's, we'll get to it if we have time at the end. Beer, just to throw it in here, beer is bottled hot because I shouldn't say it, it's actually bottled cold, but then it's heated after it's bottled. And that's because, I think, it's a blend from sport. I forgot even why. Okay. It is bottled. It's bottled cold, but then pasteurized after it's bottled, because you can't pasteurize it beforehand because you lose the bubbles. But, and you put it into the bottle, and then you pasteurize it afterwards, and that has its own childhood food also, especially that have come up recently. Okay, if we even have time, we'll get to that also. Okay, but the rest of them are bottled cold, and then we're on with life. Okay, I'm gonna, before we get to some of the shilohs that there are, I want to throw in that we're not talking about Pesach. Okay, we're talking about the regular kasher. I should have mentioned this last week also, because Pesach has its own special twist to all these shilohs, have their own special twist for the Pesach angle of this also. Okay, so now we've heard how you make your alcohol, and really that's how everybody does it, the whole world. Everybody does the same thing. They've been doing it for hundreds of years, basically the same way. Okay, you're going to see the main shiloh that keeps coming up again and again and again is the possibility that the thing that I'm holding in my hand either is or contains stam yayin. Okay, what's the din of stam yayin? If there's grape juice, the juice that comes out of the grape, and that juice is not mevushal, if a guy touches it, that becomes usher. Called stam yayin. If we even don't know what's going on with it, and it's not mevushal, if God touches it, it's usher. So, and the simple way that grape juice gets into all of these things is at the very first stage. In order to create the mash, you need sugar, and the simple way to get sugar is from grapes. Okay, that's a simple way to get sugar. So, off the bat, we're going to be able to say you know this, that wine that doesn't have hashgacha is not kosher because it's stam yayin, right? Of course. But also things like brandy. What is brandy? Brandy is someone made wine, then they distilled it to a higher percentage of a higher, they distilled it to make it into an alcohol, so it has 30-40% alcohol, but it's wine that was turned into whiskey. Well, then of course, that wine is usher. And now, the truth is the brandy, once it's created into brandy, it is mevushal, right? It went through distillation, it is mevushal, okay? But the problem is that it became treif before it was mevushal. Okay? When it was just plain old wine, at that point it was already usher. Distilling it then, being mevushal, doesn't help you.
When we say, you know,
touched by a grape,
does that mean physically, or they're wearing latex gloves?
Okay, so if...
Because my old workers may take the grapes off the trees for
me. So grapes, it is not usher. The only... Stam yayin only can become usher from the time of what's called hamshacha. Hamshacha means when the liquid separates from the solid. Okay, when you squeeze a grape, even when you squeeze it at first, there's solid mixed into the liquid. It still can't become stam yayin. Can only become stam yayin once the liquid has been separated, which is a certain stage when you filter out all the sediment and stuff like that. At that point, if a guy touches it or moves it, it can become usher. Okay, so he doesn't even have to touch it. If he moves it, he can make it usher also. Okay. Yeah. So if it wasn't made under hashgacha, it's finished. I mean, it's hopeless. Okay, it's not going to be kosher. So any of these things. I mean, brandy. I mean, cognac is a brandy made in a certain part of the world, but it's any those kind of things are of course also without unless they have hashgacha. Okay, now then there's also, I said to you that you know there are vodkas. Vodka has to say what it's made out of. It has to say the grain that comes from. Okay, there are vodkas that say proudly that they're made from grapes. What does that mean? What does that mean they're made from grape? It means that someone took grape, they made wine, they distilled that wine till it was 95% pure, and then they watered it down, and they sell it as, and they have ones made out of milk also. Okay, which is not made out of milk. It's not really made out of, it's made out of whey, which has shiloh to it also. It's not only is it milk, it's probably not kosher. So if it says on the vodka bottle, it has to say in America, it has to say what it's made out of. And you can look on the bottle and see. So you could catch a stam yayin or a, it says milk, but it means whey, and it's not kosher. Okay, those are obviously not kosher. And then there are cocktails that are made with these wines. An apricot sour is made with brandy in it. Okay, that's part of the recipe. Okay, black Russians are made with brandy in them. So it's not kosher. It's obviously not kosher because it has stam yayin mixed into it. Okay, so you know me.
Black Russians, Kahlua, and vodka.
Okay, that's how you do it. I believe you. I believe you. Okay.
It's cool. It's been around.
Okay.
It's not kosher. It's a problem. I understand
that.
That's why you don't order it.
Okay. So, okay. So I take that back. If something is known to include brandy in it, okay, so then it's obviously not kosher. Okay, so we sort of like push those to the side. Those are like sort of easy ones to get rid of, and you probably don't drink brandy. You know that, to not drink brandy without hashgacha. Okay. Okay. Now, there's another thing.
It means fruit alcohol. So
What? No, no, okay, let me take, I'm sorry, that's good you said that, I'll clarify. By law, something that's called brandy, just plain brandy, means it comes from grapes. If you make brandy out of plums, you have to call it plum brandy. Okay. You can't call the word, you have to use the word brandy. When you use the word brandy by itself, that means grape brandy. If you want to make, if you make brandy out of peaches, you have to call it peach brandy, okay, which you can. Brandy, in that sense, means you took a fruit, you made a wine, so to speak, out of it, you made peach wine out of it, and then you distilled it, then you to make it a more concentrated.
Do they mix those plum and grape ever? Can they?
If can, yeah. But
plum brandy contain grape also?
Okay, we're going to get that in a little while. I'm going to talk about that in the blending stage. And if it was called peach brandy, then it is, we accept that it's peach brandy, but they may have blended in another thing later on. Okay, but we're going to get that.
Plum brandy is still made of struck.
Because?
Because plum, not grape. Possibility of grapes in it.
So we're going to get to that. We're going to talk about that later on. We'll get to that part of it, whether it is, whether we should be concerned or not. Okay? But the, okay, the, now, another easy thing to knock off of things that you can't, that we can't drink, okay, we're talking about the ones that are simple, are flavored items. Okay, that is to say, we're talking about, let's say, cherry whiskey, okay, or cherry brandy. That's made out of cherries. But there's another thing called cherry flavored whiskey. Okay, that's not made out of cherries. That's made out of whatever, corn or rye or whatever they made out of, and they flavored it with cherries. Or they have vodka that's orange-flavored vodka. They have spiced rum. Okay, these are flavored products. They took a plain alcohol, whatever it was, whatever the base alcohol was, and let's assume the base alcohol was kosher, but then they flavored it with something else. The rum, the base, is made out of sugar. That's what you make rum out of. You make rum out of sugar, that's okay. But then they flavored it, that's why it's called a spiced rum, because they flavored it. So those flavorings, we spoke about it last week, those flavorings could potentially be not kosher. Okay, so now, when we talk about medicines, there's possibilities of being made in certain situations to allow flavors, or to sometimes ignore flavors, but not when we're talking about just a plain old beverage. Okay, you wouldn't drink, how many people call up the CRC office to find out whether this flavor of Slurpees or this flavor of soda, pop, is kosher, right? And the main child labor is the flavor, because of course the flavor needs to have hashgacha on it. So we have a spiced rum, means it tasted like rum. The taste was altered by someone putting a flavor into it. That flavor is potentially not kosher. So things that are flavored need hashgacha also. So it goes not only things that say that they're flavored, but there are some things called imitation bourbon. Let's say, what does imitation bourbon mean, or imitation rye? That means it's a one liquor, which was flavored to taste like a different one. Okay? It was rye liquor that was flavored to taste like bourbon. So it's called imitation bourbon because it's not really bourbon. Bourbon has a legal identity. What makes bourbon? This is not bourbon, but it tastes like bourbon. Okay? Or a liqueur. The liqueurs are, in almost every case, are flavored. They're legally allowed to be, but they're almost always are flavored. Liqueurs are mixes of lots of different things. There's a liquor in there someplace, but there's mixed with all kinds of stuff which have their own childhood, but especially they're all flavored. By and large, they're flavored. They're called cordials or cocktails. All these kind of different things are all flavored, or commonly flavored. So those are out. Okay, so what the ones we've gotten clearly out of the picture is the ones that are obviously contain stamina in them, like the brandy or something like that, or the ones that are flavored. We got those are pushed out also. Okay, now we come to the more complicated child is, what about being choshish that there's wine, that there's brandy, and some of these other things? Okay. Should I be choshish if I have bourbon? What is bourbon? Bourbon is legally has to be at least 51% corn alcohol. Okay, the corn alcohol doesn't pose the problem, but what's the other 49%? It, usually, it's just it's all corn, but it could be anything else.
Do they have to write on it?
They don't. No, there's no ingredients. You don't have to put ingredients on these. You have to meet certain legal requirements. So to call it bourbon, you have to be at least 51% corn alcohol.
Whatever else you want.
But anything else you want to, you could put, yeah. No, with limits. You might not be able to put flavoring into it. You may or may not, depending on how you write it. You can't put apple juice into it, but you could put in rye alcohol in there. That's okay. You could put in wheat alcohol. You could put in brandy. You can put it, you have a lot of latitude you can put in as long as you meet certain legal requirements. So should you be choshish that the person put in, he mixed in either stam yain, like as in brandy he mixed in, or he put in grain neutral spirits. And we'll see later, especially what people might put in. Yeah.
Excuse me. The legal requirements you mentioned, these are United States legal requirements.
United States, yeah.
Okay, so things are bottled and made out, you know, grants, whatever, in order for them to be sold in the United States, they have to
yes,
the
yes. So these are labeling requirements. So if you want to sell, if you want to sell rye whiskey in the United States, it has to meet. If you want to call it rye whiskey, it has to meet certain requirements. The exceptions, so to speak, are when you use the name of your country. What I mean, if you want to call something Canadian whiskey, okay, in America that has an explanation. What is Canadian whiskey? But usually that means is whatever the Canadian government calls Canadian whiskey, that's okay. We're happy with that. That's a lot of times what the rules are. You want to call it Scotch? Whatever the Scottish government says is considered is allowed to be labeled as Scotch. Good with that. It's good with us. Okay, but these are American labeling requirements. So if you want to make, you can't make bourbon out of the country because one of the requirements has to be made in Kentucky. But if you say so if you want to make
no,
am I making that? Am I getting that wrong?
Yeah.
Okay.
It has to be in the United States.
It has to be in the United States.
Yeah.
Okay. Fine. So then you might not be able to pull that off to get make bourbon out of the United States. Okay. If it has to be made in the United States, but you can if you want to make rye whiskey that you could, but that'll have to meet American standards of what it is. Okay, so the question is, should we be choishes that there's either straight cognac put into it or distilled grain neutral spirits put into that? That's our question. That's our most serious question. It's going to come up in a bunch of ways. Where did it come up?
What was the problem with grain neutral spirits?
Grain neutral spirits that came from Stamyang. Okay. Grain neutral spirits that came from Stamyang. Okay.
Isn't that unlikely? Isn't it more expensive to get alcohol from grapes than other...
Okay, that's a good question. Why would anybody use wine? Why would anybody use wine to make alcohol when the wine can be sold as plain old wine? You can make alcohol out of anything.
Even if not, it's just an expensive way to get alcohol.
Right. Why would anybody waste their money? That's a very good question. Okay. And
it's prevalent where they have distributors
and
they have wasted.
Okay, so the answer is you're both right. Okay, the answer is, as a rule, it's a small chash that somebody would put that in. Okay, because like you said, why would I waste wine that I could sell for whatever at expensive cost when I could make it out of wheat or something else that's simple and cheap and I can make it out of also. Okay. However, the problem is, and for those of you who are old enough to remember, in the 1980s, there was a vinegar scandal, paste of time, okay, where what happened was, exactly that's what happened. A hashgacha relied, and we'll see in a second that it's correct. Not only is it correct in the Matzias, it's correct in Din, that they relied that nobody would use alcohol made out of wine. Why did anybody make alcohol out of wine? It doesn't make any sense. You make alcohol out of other things. Wine just seems too expensive. In fact, the company was doing that, and it was all over the place. It had turned into, been used in many different products, and it was all over the place and caused quite a ruckus. Okay, so the reason why somebody would use it is because, in particular, in France, the government is very protective over their wine industry. And in years when there's too much wine and they're afraid that the prices of wine will be depressed, what the government does is the government buys up wine and basically throws it out. Okay? So instead of literally throwing it into the garbage, they distill it and make alcohol out of it and then sell it as just plain alcohol. So that doesn't affect the market for the wine. Okay, so they're propping up the price of their wine by destroying some of it, basically destroying it. Okay, but instead of destroying it, they turn it into alcohol, which is all those grain neutral spirits. Okay, so they'll sell it for cheap. They're competitive with other alcohol. Basically, they're just throwing in the garbage. That's what they're doing. So, and that's in fact what happened that year in the 80s. Back then, that's what happened. And it continues to happen. Okay, the government continues to do that every so often to prop it up. But there's another thing. There's also in Ireland and New Zealand, okay, they have lots of milk. And they make lots of milk products. And a byproduct of milk is whey. That's a byproduct of, byproduct of cheese making is whey. Whey has a sugar in it called lactose, and that lactose, countries that have lots of it need things to do with it. Okay, and one of the things that they do is they create alcohol and sell that as alcohol just for plain use, just for grain neutral spirits.
Why is whey a problem? Because it's all stuff?
What? No, not because of, it's a milkless question also, but it's a question because the way you get whey is when you make cheese. Okay, cheese could be made either with maimed, which is not kosher. It could be cooked together with it and add bleeds of Venus Aachen to it. And it could have another thing, other ways that Venus Aachen gets its way into the whey. But it's important you mention that because, for the shayla that we're heading to, all of the possible isurim for that milk, for that lactose-based alcohol are all isurim drabanan. Okay, everything you heard me say was an isurim drabanan. Glinus Akram and all its different forms are all Isurim Drabanan. And even the milchigs that lactose is only milchigs mit Drabanan. Okay, it's only called Meimei Cholov. It's only milchigs mit Drabanan. Okay, so all the shayos that there are to the whey, the alcohol that comes from whey, are all shayos of Drabanans.
So
No, whey is milchus b'deraisa. It's made, well, it's machlokes shushan. We pass in that it's milchus b'deraisa. But when you separate the whey into two parts, lactose and the other parts, the lactose is only asam d'rabbanan, and the other parts are asam d'rabbanan. The milchus b'deraisa. So whey is milchus b'deraisa, but lactose, which is the sugar from that whey, is only milchus b'deraisa. Okay, which is in the gear, right to the shiloh we're headed to, which is the whey. The alcohol could be traced because it's made from whey, from lactose, or it could be traced because it's made from stam yayin. Okay, all of those are isurim d'rabbanan. That's my right. Okay, all of those are isurim d'rabbanan. Okay, all of those are isurim. Those things are all isurim d'rabbanan. Everything that could go wrong with the alcohol is isurim d'rabbanan. So the question is, we have a possibility that there's an isurim d'rabbanan mixed into my food. Am I allowed to eat the food? Or am I not allowed to eat the food? Okay, there's a possibility that there's an isurim d'rabbanan. So the Rama says that there's a din called toilin b'drabanan. Okay, when you have a question whether something's asum b'drabanan and you meet certain criteria, okay, that we're not going to do that now, but there are certain criteria. If you meet certain criteria, you can be simach that there is the issur d'rabanan does not exist in my food. Okay, but it's not being bothered. You're just assuming that it's not there. Now you can't do that in all cases, but this is an example. I didn't make this up. Ramosha says this is an example where you could be toilet with Rabbanan. You could be toilet that there's no Issur Rabbanan mixed into your food. Ramosha says, but that's true, and it is mutter b'diyam. You are allowed to not be concerned about that. But he says, in his words, a Baal Nefesh should not eat it. And the reason, he doesn't say this, but the reason is because many, many others do not hold what this Rama says, including the Mechaber himself. Pashas, the Mechaber, does not hold it himself. So, not to say that's awesome, okay? Because the din is it's a drabonim. The Rama says that you could be toiled. It's a din in kuf yud dalet. You could be toiled by a drabonim. But I'm not saying it the right way. Really, the Gemara basically says not like that. Okay, so it's the Rama saying something from somebody. It's a question whether it's right or wrong. The Rama says it. The Rama says it's mutter, but Baal Nefesh, she says should not do that. Okay, but it gives us a basis for saying, being as you pointed out, that it's not really very common have these kind of alcohols, and the Rama says that in din you're allowed to not assume that it's there. It gives us a certain comfort saying this probably isn't those. Probably those alcohols probably are not in my beverage.
Are you okay. Also relying just to put on that on government regulations? Because bourbon is not allowed to have wine in it. Is not allowed to have. You're not allowed to bring grain neutral spirit into bourbon. Bourbon has 51% corn, at least, and then other things that are all in the original mash. You're not allowed to bring anything afterwards.
I don't remember that detail. It could be. I'm not disagreeing with that. I don't remember. It doesn't take away from.
But no. More bourbon is still not.
Okay. I don't know that. We have to look at the detail of that. Assume that's correct, and you're not concerned that they put actual grape into the mash. That's very unlikely that they put it into it. If that would be true, then there's something to look at. That's, you know. You also have to read, and I'll check through my papers afterwards. The regulations are very specific, and the way the person labels his bottle may allow him to put himself afterwards. Okay, depending on how you call your bourbon, okay, there's ways to call it. I forget the details. I have to look back on my papers. Okay. The way you word it, whether you call it blended bourbon or I don't remember. There's
American
a 5 or 6.
American whiskey is not bourbon.
No, not American whiskey. I'm saying even within the
blended,
word bourbon.
Blended is not.
So I don't remember. I have to look back at the details. And you may be right. I'm saying there are legal requirements, and people are very particular how they write their name on the barrel on their bottle to match that. But yeah, you could potentially find ways to get something mutter. Okay. But I'm saying even without that, even if we wouldn't have that comfort, we do have a Rama saying that we assume that the things do not have the Issur d'Rabbanan mixed into it. Okay? Now there's another possible side, which is like this. There's special rules for the bittul of stam yayin. Okay? Stam yayin, the rules of how it's bottled are very different than other foods. Okay? Regular foods are bottled b'shishim. When you have 60 times as much of the hetter as the isser, it's bottled. Stam yayin has a few unusual kulas to it. And let's see if we could see where they fit in over here. One kula is that stam yayin is bottled in 6 instead of 60. Okay? The bittul is b'shisha instead of shishim. Okay? Now, there's many permutations to how that din works. It doesn't work in every case, but in lots of cases, stam yayin is bottled b'shisha. Okay, that means is that unless there's a considerable amount of stam yayin mixed into my whiskey, it's going to be mutter. It's going to be bottled b'shisha. Rav Moshe has a bunch of, Rav Moshe is very in favor of that, and he says, there's studies to say that it doesn't work, and the cases where it doesn't work, but by and large, he said that would be okay. Then there's another din. Not only is Stam Yayin Batal B'Shisha, but let me hold that for a second. I'm going to say that in a second. Okay, so we have Stam Yayin Batal B'Shisha. Let's think how that fits into our steps over here. If in the original mash would have had Stam Yayin mixed into it, and it would be Batal B'Shisha, we would be safe. Where else might we run into Stam Yayin that could potentially be Batal? Okay, the distillation equipment that's used to distill my whiskey, it's not so common that someone's going to be making brandy and other whiskeys on the same equipment. Okay, that someone should make bourbon, distilled bourbon, and rye whiskey on the same equipment is really not so likely. It is likely that it's somewhat likely, brandy with other brandies, with other fruit brandies. You might make grape brandy, what we call real straight brandy, and peach brandy on the same equipment. Okay, so the question is, should we be choshish that use the same kalim for brandy and a different fruit brandy? Or what you're probably more familiar with is, in the aging stage, we age whiskey for many years in barrels, and what the most famous one is that you age scotch in barrels, often in sherry casks. Okay, you've heard the shaila. Aged in sherry casks, those are wine barrels. So the shaila is, should I be choshish that the stam yayin that's absorbed into that kli gets into my food? Okay, so this is not a question that they actually put it in. Well, actually it is, but for now we'll pretend that it's not. That the shaila is just that there might be bleas coming out from the barrel into my food. Should we be concerned, will that chafe up my food? Okay, so for that question, not only is stam yayin batal b'shisha, okay, well, let's talk about the batal b'shisha on the barrels. You know, this just has an interesting twist to it. Have anybody here ever seen a barrel that they use for storing whiskey? You've seen it? Okay, now, I have to tell you something. Unfortunately, in certain, lots of whiskeys of less sophisticated type are stored just in plain old drums. Okay, they just sit around, they sit in nothing fancy. But certain ones have legal requirements how they have to, or tradition of how they're stored. Like, he's involved in bourbon. Bourbon has to be stored in new oak coat casks, I think. Okay, that's always in brandy. And scotch is often done in sherry, not dafka, but it's often done, there's a sherry involvement. If you've ever seen one of these casks, the cask is like this tall, okay, and it holds about 60 gallons of whiskey. But if you look at the walls of those casks, the walls of the cask are about an inch thick. Okay, the walls are so thick that if you would take the bleas that are absorbed into that entire cask and try to be mavato those bleas into the whiskey that's in there, okay, you surely wouldn't have shishim. You wouldn't even have shisha. It wouldn't even be bottled in six. The amount that would, the ratio comes out to about 4.25 to 1. Okay, the blea that comes out of those, the walls are so thick that the blea will not even be bottled with shisha. So you say, whoa, so if they're using a sherry cask that had bleas into it, does that mean that the bleas that are coming out of that cask are not even bottled with shisha into my whiskey? Okay? And the answer is, I mentioned it just because the interest of it. The answer is that's true. And if you say that everything I said so far is true, except that there's an exception to this thing. Okay? And the exception is that usually we assume that bleas go all the way through the full thickness of a kli. When you use a pot, you use a barrel, and you use it for tray, you use it for anything, we assume bleas go through the whole thickness of the kli. There's a special thing by Stam Yayin that we assume bleas only go in kadei klipa, a very thin layer's worth into the kli. Okay? So, since the bleed is only going to kadei klipa, so the whole thickness of the barrel is an inch thick, and that bleed wouldn't be bought to b'shisha. But since we don't have to be choshish that the bleed went through a kadei klipa, that is going to be bought to b'shisha. Okay, so bleeds that would come out of the walls of the barrel will be bought to b'shisha. So if you put your scotch in a sherry cask, and you had bleeds coming out of it, it would indeed be bought to b'shisha. Rav Moshe says, Baal Nefesh should not rely on that because he has a whole bunch of reasons not to be Samech on Bittu B'Shisha, but in Din it really it's Mutter. Okay? I'm going to take a question.
If you just take the Kliba
As a rule, we assume that it is. I don't know, I didn't make the calculation for the specific case, but as a rule, you assume that the Kliba is Bittu B'Shisha also. Okay? Ramesh is not talking about casks. that Rav Moshe's case is talking about people actually poured it in. We're going to get to that in a second. What he was talking about. He wants to talk about sherry. We'll talk about in a second what he was talking about. I'm going to get to that in a second, the case he was really talking about. Okay, I'm going to take a question, but then what I really said about the case, I'm not finished yet at all. Okay? So just hold it a second for the case. Yes, go ahead.
So if the barrel is like an inch thick on each side, so that means that wouldn't it be if the barrel was at least 12 inches wide, so then you'd have 12 inches of scotch compared to 2 inches of barrel? And then
okay, I don't remember the math. Okay, we have a professor of, I forgot, I'm trying to remember what kind of math he did, who made the calculation was. Okay, I don't remember the math of it. What he said was, I think it was in this case, he said, he gives his graduate students on their test, he gives them like, figure this out for me. That's their test. Test is not like, 2 + 2 = 4. His test is like, go figure out this problem that they never heard of before. And so he threw this out to them as one of their, an exam. It was like, okay, figure this out. Okay, and it has complications because the barrels are shaped, and I don't know. And it came out with his point of how to calculate it, that was about 4 1/4. So if you want to start up with him. But we're off the hook. Okay, now, what's happened of late, I'll mention this about the cask, some of you may have heard this, what's happened of late is there's been changes in the way the industry works and how they get their casks, and the industry has started using plain casks and actually putting sherry right into the scotch, or smearing the outside of the barrel with the sherry before they put the scotch into. There's different ways that the industry has changed. Instead of using the good old-fashioned sherry cask, a cask that had once held sherry, they've changed the way they work to start putting sherry more directly into the whiskey, which doesn't give us this cool that we're talking about, that it's bought the Bashisha because it's on Kitei Klipa. Okay? So now I have to mention this. I'm running out of time. I'm going to mention it like this. There's two schools of thought. It's worth you hearing this. There's two schools of thought of how to make scotch. Okay. The bulk of people who make scotch say that the reason why they use sherry casks, so they throw in some sherry, is because it negates negative tannins and tastes that come from the barrels. It's going to sit in this wood barrel for so many years. To negate certain negative traits that are in there, you use a sherry cask, and somehow that negates the taste. Those people who are of that shita, which is the bulk of the people who make scotch, people who are of that shita do not use lots of sherry. They don't advertise that they use sherry. They don't make a big to-do about that they're using sherry, because it's there as sort of like a, it just like helps avoid problems. Okay, and when you drink that beverage, the people who know these things say, you don't taste the sherry that's in there. The sherry is there as to negate something that you don't want to have, but it's not there. You don't actually taste the sherry itself. That's what people say. There's a minority of people who make scotch who have a different shita of what the sherry's role is, and in their mind, the sherry plays a positive role in making the food, in making the scotch. It's good for it. You don't put a little bit of it, you use lots of it. You use only first-run sherry casks. It's a very prominent part of it, and they let you know that it's a very prominent part of what they produce. To the point that the drinkers say that they taste it. They even taste the sherry that's in there. Okay, it comes through all the way that far. Now, the truth is that in Din, there's good case to be said that even that sherry, the stronger amounts, is bottled anyhow. Okay? Bitter Bashisha means you might taste it anyhow. It's still bottled Bashisha. There's a big shout out. Rav Moshe and Dayan Weiss have a machlokes about this. What happens if you actually notice it's there on purpose and you want to taste it and it plays a good role in it? I mean, though that group of people, will it be bottled, will not be bottled? It's going to be bottled b'shisha. Okay? No one's putting in 20% sherry into their scotch. It's going to be bottled b'shisha, but it plays, in their mind, it's playing a very strong role and they use a lot of it, blah, 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 the whole thing. So, what it is that in Din, there's good arguments to be made that it might be mutter anyhow, but most the hashgachas that I know of have taken the position that those where there's clearly sherry put into there, for the manufacturers who are of that shita, that the sherry is put in there, we want lots of it, and it gives a very strong, prominent part of the taste, they won't allow people to use it. They won't recommend those products, because there are poskim hold that that's not good. Okay? The ones where the sherry is playing only the minor role, the sherry is there to obviate other concerns, those they'll let go by. Even though most scotch, even though they know that even with that advertising, most people who make scotch are using sherry casks, they'll recommend or allow people to use those scotches, even though they are probably using shoving them anyhow, with the assumption that it's, the truth is it's probably about to, even in the worst one, but they're going to let that go by. Okay,
and
so
it's definitely label the difference between that.
What it is that you, if you read the literature from company with their label, you often see where, which shita they're of. They don't say we belong to the shita, but when they're making a to-do about the fact that they have sherry, that's because they want the sherry to have a positive taste on their food, on their.
So it depends on their intention or whether or not I can taste it.
It doesn't depend. Doesn't depend on either. It's that people with that intention make their scotch differently. The guy, the people, the bulk of scotch makers think that those guys are ruining the scotch. They say, "Oh gosh, you can't make stuff like that." It's like saying Malaga wine is wine. Right? It's like, "Oh my gosh, you can't call that stuff wine." So that's what everybody else who makes wine looks at the stuff and says, "Oh, you can't drink that stuff." You know what I mean? It's shoe polish, right? But the people who make that kind of stuff, they're very proud of it, and the other guys are horrified. So it's like two different groups within the industry. So you could tell by the way they promote themselves whether they're from this group or from that group. Okay, so I'm saying it like this. You can't say that the ones that are, so to speak, recommended have no shilas to them. They have shilas also to them. Okay, Ramosha said that he wasn't talking about scotch. Ramosha said he wouldn't drink any of these alcoholic beverages on his own. I haven't got that yet. I don't know if I'm going to. But Ramosha says, I wouldn't drink any of this stuff. I wouldn't be shilas on these things, because the Baal Nefesh shouldn't. He says, unless, it's very interesting. He says, unless someone offered me a drink, someone came to me and showed said, L'chaim, so that I shouldn't look like I'm showing off and I'm better than you are, he would drink it. Because then he held that it was mutter. He says, Mishum, you are right. It would look like, I don't drink that stuff. So I'm better than you. Then he would drink it. But if, on his own, he would never drink the stuff. Because he held that Baal Nefesh should be machmir on a lot of these shilas we even haven't gotten through. Okay, I'm going to say one more thing, because I'm really running out of time. The text is waiting for me, literally, waiting for me. Is the thing that I believe Ramosh was talking about, which has to do with this thing called blenders, okay, which is the...
Should we get to next week?
What do you say?
To next week and do this?
I'll say what I can now. There's a thing called... The American government charges be'erach 100% tax on beverage alcohol. Alcohol that's going to be used for drinking gets taxed by 100%, as opposed to alcohol that's used in, let's say, shampoo, that gets charged regular tax. Okay, there's a 100% tax on beverage alcohol. So the government gives you has a loophole, which is, if you add flavor into your alcohol beverage, up till 2.5% flavor that you want to add in, that's okay. You don't get, even if that flavor happens to have some alcohol in it, you don't get charged for that alcohol. That alcohol is looked at as non-beverage alcohol. Okay, so you're making a drink, it's 97% regular alcohol, and the other 2.5% is a flavor, what they call a blender. You have a flavor added in. If that blender happens to have some alcohol in it, it's okay. You don't have to pay tax on that as if it's a beverage alcohol. So what companies realize is that, so basically you're getting 2.5% alcohol, when you could get 2.5% alcohol for free, as long as it has a flavor to it. So what they do is they take alcohol, add flavor to it, and then throw it into their whiskey, meaning that for that alcohol, you don't have to pay the 100% tax on it. Okay, so they just, maybe that was too complicated. What they're doing is, this 2.5%, that really is just plain old alcohol that they're eating in. But they pour flavor into the alcohol so that the government will say, oh, you're not putting alcohol in, you're putting flavor in. Because this 2.5% has flavor in it. So they put flavor into it, and they put it, now by putting flavor into it, that lets them sneak the alcohol in, because I'm not putting alcohol, I'm putting flavor. This is just like it happens to have some alcohol in it. Really, it's all alcohol with a little flavor into it. Okay, that's what they put into it. And that's
the whole point, is to save 2.5%.
To save the tax, not 2.5%. Right. Right.
Canada lets you 9%.
What'd you say?
Canada lets you up to 9%.
Okay. So they put in this thing called a blender. Now the blender is really they're putting in alcohol. That's really what they're doing. But they have to put flavor into it because or else they can't put it in. Okay. That's basically where Moshe was talking about. That was the case he was talking about. They put in this 2.5%, and the shaila is, what happens if that is made out of stamina? That's the case he was talking about. Okay? And so we've sort of covered that part of it, whether it might be bottled and things like that. We have another angle on it, which is, it always has a flavor to it. Right? They don't want to put flavor in, but they're stuck. If they want to put in this 2.5%, the only way to get it in is by calling it a flavor. So they got to put a flavor in to get their free 2.5%. Okay? So, that flavor is not nearly as serious as regular flavor. That's not like making cherry vodka. Because that flavor is not meant to change the taste of the drink that I'm having. Okay, the point is, that flavor is to keep Uncle Sam happy. Okay, so they'll take advantage of it, and they might as well get a good flavor into it also. But basically, they're taking the thing that's 97.5% of a certain taste, and they're maybe adjusting the taste, they're complementing the taste, they're doing different things, but basically they're working with a thing that has a time to it, and in the rules of Bittul, something like that will be bought. Okay? In the rules of Bittul, the fact that that's just helping out in the taste will allow it to be bought. Even, it's not anything like when you make spiced rum, you altered the taste, you took the rum, and you altered the taste to make the taste a certain way. Here, I didn't alter the taste, here I'm just... I may be playing with the taste, but I'm basically keeping the taste the way it is, and such things like that are, but okay, now I have to tell you, just time-wise, we didn't cover everything, and really, to really do justice, we should go through the steps again, but we roughly covered it, and I'm sorry to run out on you guys, but I'll be back here in Mitzvah next week, so if you want to have questions, we'll go through it.